Hi, I'm Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matters. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. The AMA is a global leader in professional development and education, improving the immediate performance and long-term growth of individuals and organizations. Check us out on our website, www.amanet.org. To compete successfully in today's global marketplace, companies have to be lean, flexible, and responsive to their customers. The concept of teamwork is a key competitive strategy for developing and delivering innovative products and services in a faster, more efficient manner. In her book, World Class Teams, Linda McDermott provides a hands-on guide on how to develop, launch, lead, and evaluate world-class teams. With her co-authors, William Waite and Nolan Brawley, Linda draws heavily from her experience with such international firms as Pfizer, Colgate, AT&T, and Motorola. Linda is president and CEO of Equipro International. She is an American Society of Training and Development Award winner for her work in the creation and management of cross-functional global teams. Linda, thanks for being with us today. In your book, you identify five success factors for global teams. Could you go through each one of them briefly?
Well, let's see if we can count here. I think the first success factor is making sure that from the senior sponsorship, whoever's sponsoring that team, that there is a clear strategic direction for the team that aligns with business strategy and the team is on the same page. That would be the first thing, would be strategy. Second success factor would be the structure of the team, making sure that you've got the right team leader and the right team representation. If you have a global team, you can't necessarily have, you know, a representative from every country of the world on your global team, but you need to have your major markets represented as well as representatives who can represent, let's say, smaller regions on the team. So the structure of the team. I think who you put into place, the skills of the team leader and the team members are absolutely essential because you've got to have team leaders and team members who can think strategically, who can think big picture, who can think globally and move out of their own country and cultural and discipline biases to help move the team in a global direction. I think the fourth factor would be the training that's provided. We have a training program called Crossing the Borders. That's a two-day program that's designed to launch these global teams that helps them set their mission, helps them set their goals, helps them set their operating agreements, like what time zone are we going to originate the call from and, you know, how are we going to accommodate to our Asian and Australian friends when we're leading this team out of New York, et cetera. And then finally, I think the fifth measure of success is actually to set measures of success, to have the team set what are the criteria they're going to use to measure their success beyond just the accomplishment of the team goals, but what kind of legacy is this team going to leave behind? Because particularly the earlier global teams that are formed in a company, they are looked to for guidance and best practices. So how you measure these team success is important too.
Can you talk about the role of senior management on the success of global teams?
I think it is so critical that that senior management, before they embark on this whole global team structure and strategy, really understand how that potentially is going to throw some wrenches into the culture of the organization. I worked with one company extensively that was claimed itself to be an international organization, but I think it was just a multinational organization that's run out of the United States. And they formed these global teams with all the best of intentions for business strategy reasons. But what they didn't factor in was that once you form these global teams, there's a power shift. In this particular organization, the power shift and power struggles happened because decisions were used to being made out of New York for what's good for the rest of the world. And now you form these global teams and you try to empower the global teams to think more what really truly is the best for the rest of the world. And New York and the U.S. way of thinking isn't necessarily the best way. And this organization, I don't think, was quite prepared for the power struggles that emerged from them setting up those teams. It's matured over the years, and they've become much more of a global company. But initially, it was tough. And the interesting thing around senior management is senior management was not on the same page about the need for these teams, and we're not always necessarily supporting these global teams in these power struggles that happen. So that's why it's so important for senior management to be aligned and to really be collectively supporting these global teams.
You know, one of the things that I find very interesting is the fact that they don't physically meet. They don't come together. They work virtually. What kind of tools does that virtual teamwork require?
Well, the good news is that we are finally, and I say that finally underscored, getting some technology that can really help. In the past, in the early days of when I was working on these teams, again, I always participated where they were at least brought together face-to-face in the beginning. Then, you know, if they cross time zones, then you've got to get, you know, some people are taking the call in their pajamas, you know, either coming in from breakfast or getting ready to go to bed, and other people it's in the middle of their workday. But so we've moved from, you know, you still have teleconferences available. VideoCon has not quite, it's only now, I think, starting to catch up. I was doing one the other day, and I commented to the client. I said, finally, you've got this technology, VideoCon technology, that you actually can work without very many delays. And now, of course, with WebEx-type meetings, you can actually have you can have documents in front of you, as well as having VideoCon. And so technology is starting to catch up, so that you can't recreate face-to-face. There's nothing substituting face-to-face. But we're getting closer. And the more companies are going global. I was with a potential client 2 days ago, and by his own admission, they've been a U.S.-based company. But now through acquisition, they're opening up centers in India. They've got a couple in Europe. And now Latin America could be a potentially big market. He admitted their people don't know how to work virtually. Mm-hmm. Certainly not across outside the U.S. geographic boundaries. And so I said to him, I said, well, one of the first things I would do, in addition to all the things you and I have been talking about, is I said I would get your IT people involved and get technology in place that can facilitate this, because you just cannot be flying your people all around.
Okay. Now let's focus on across-the-border teams. What qualities do you look for in a team designed to handle those situations?
Well, you're going to hear me use the word strategic or strategy a lot, because I think that what makes these types of teams most successful is their collective ability to get outside of their region or outside of their particular functional area, to be able to look across the area that's going to be affected by this project. So I think that's one of the first things that of a team that's really successful, is they keep the big picture in mind and not just their narrow silo that they represent, whatever that is. So that is the most important quality, I think, of a team. I think teams need to appreciate the different cultures that are represented on the team, whether they be regional cultures or, again, cross-functional cultures, so that they have flexibility to adapt their particular siloed areas to the strategy of the team itself.
And when you think about the kinds of teams we're talking about, most of the teams we're talking about here, they're all sort of within the same company. But it's not unusual, especially these days, that you would have a team that's based on a strategic alliance. So teams can be from different companies.
Absolutely. And then that's just another one of those crosses, that additional cross. Now it's cross-company. In fact, I was just working with a team yesterday that is an alliance team. And it's an interesting, because one member of one of the companies has a European division. The other company's European division is not involved in this alliance. It's only, so the product that they're focused on is a US product, but all the time this one company is hearing in the back of their head the European needs for this product. So that just adds, and so that adds just another level of complexity to the fact that one's a very big pharma company and the other is a smaller biotech firm, and so their company cultures and decision-making styles and their entrepreneurial risk-taking are different. And so all of those can be problematic if they're not appreciated and managed well.
But you can train people.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, the genesis for my book, World Class Teams, came as a result of work that we did for a major pharmaceutical company where we went around the world and launched these global teams. And out of that, well, so we developed a, quote, training program to launch these teams. It was a two-day program called Crossing, it is a two-day program called Crossing the Borders. And at the end of the 2 days, we bring these global team members together, and they receive training on how to set up their team's charter, how to set team goals, how to decide how they're going to operate together. If it's a global team, you've got time zone issues, you've got language issues, you've got cultural issues. What are we going to do about those and how are we going to manage? Which is why it is so essential that these teams be set up face to face. They may never meet again face to face, but the training should be face to face so that they can get to know each other on a very personal level, so that when they are talking, you know, in across four or five different time zones, they understand each other. And so so when they walk out of that two-day training, they have their work agreements, they have their work tasks, they know what their roles are. So it's a training program, but it's not like what I call kumbaya, where you just sit around all day and sort of get to know each other and, you know, do trust falls. No, these people are actually trained in how to get their work done.
What happens when there's a problem in a virtual team, when someone can't make the adjustment to this kind of environment?
Well, that is a problem, because in most of these teams, they are formed in what I call a matrix fashion. So what that means is that they work for the team, but they also, part of the rest of their time, they are working back in their own discipline. It does happen where you're assigned permanently to one of these teams and that's all you do, but oftentimes they're really matrix. They're matrix back into their discipline. So while the team, oftentimes what happens then, the team leader is oftentimes the only full-time member of these teams. And so if there's a problem on the team, what they've got is they don't have full authority over each of their team members. It's not like in a traditional hierarchical organization where you work for me and I'm your boss, and if you're not performing well, I give you a performance review and give you feedback, and if it doesn't work out, you're out. I mean, that's kind of oversimplified. But in these teams, you may work for me as on this project, but you also administratively report into somebody else. And so it becomes a little bit trickier around me giving you feedback and managing your performance and so forth. So that probably adds another quality of to team leaders that I'd forgotten to mention before, is you're usually in a position of influence, not a position of authority. So that you've got to find a way to be able to really tap into the motivational needs of each of your team members.
So after the team has completed its work, is it a best practice to conduct some sort of postmortem?
Oh, absolutely. I've been engaged in the last 6 months and probably five what we call lessons learned, best practices sessions, where the team is being disbanded because they've accomplished their goals, or the product's gone off patent or whatever. And we've done a lessons learned. They go back over their history and they look at, where did we succeed? Where could we have improved? Now that we're moving on to other teams, what are the lessons learned? And we're actually trying to use intra-company networks to post the findings from these lessons learned sessions so that other teams can access the lessons learned. And actually, part of the reason for me writing the book was because I wanted to pull together all of our lessons learned from all these global teams that we'd been working with.
We'd like to thank Linda McDermott for being our guest today. The name of her book is World Class Teams. And now, it's time for You've Been Spotted, the part of the program where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or a seminar at one of our five executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Here's Kevin Lee.
Today at the AMA Center, I'm visiting AMA's seminar, Leadership and Team Development for Managerial Success, and I'm asking participants to share their experiences with leading virtual or global teams.
Our country, or our company, I should say, it's nationally focused, so we have projects going on in almost all the coastal states around the country. We're a small group, and we've also started recently establishing regional offices to better connect to the local agencies that we're trying to serve. Sort of a new effort for the Coastal Services Center. And the way we've tried to make this work, we're attempting a few things. We've been lucky enough to have some really good high-end video capability within our organization, so a lot of our meetings have folks from several of the regional offices participating. We also have a tool which basically allows an individual in a virtual team to create a login site for the virtual team members off the central location to basically see that individual's computer screen. So if you're bringing up data or if you're looking at a design drawing, everybody can look at it and you can actually work through it and then share, you know, basically review the results.
Well, right now, currently, I have 7 employees, 3 here in New York and 4 overseas in different countries, 2 in Mexico, 1 in North Carolina, of course the United States, and 1 in China. My group is responsible for developing training material, so we use online collaborations such as document management system where we could route documents, understand it. It does handle different languages as well, so that becomes a benefit.
Hi, my name is Denise Maldonado. I am the course leader for Leadership and Team Development for Managerial Success. This class is basically to teach people about not just leadership skills in terms of managing any staff, but how to do leadership skills specifically for teams. So the piece that people really like a lot is the lead, okay? That's the leadership effectiveness for an adaptability. And they really like that because they get to assess their own capabilities, their styles, and learn which styles work well with what type of readiness level for the followers being the employees and the staff. So they like that because it gives them a better way of looking at their staff, assessing what their capabilities are. Are they willing? Are they insecure? Are they able to do it? Do they need any more training in terms of their own skill sets and how to approach them most effectively instead of just using one style with everybody?
We had an activity that involved creating a vision for a team that had been assembled to solve a process distribution problem in a company. The background information that we had listed the membership of that team, which included all the departments in an organization. And once we got a chance to look at the results and see where we'd made a mistake, it was really enlightening and basically let us know that you can give a team a very clear objective, but if you really start out with the wrong folks to begin with in this team, you're still at risk for maybe going off track.
The class itself has helped me understand what the needs are of my employees and how to deal with them appropriately. Directly, I do manage 7 people, but indirectly, 100 people. So with those people, it becomes a little more challenging not having the appropriate leadership skills. That's why this course, I think, is very beneficial in understanding those.
It would be great to get some feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Your email or phone message might be heard on a future episode. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.